I'm going to be at my church tonight, going to get some exercise in, some much-needed exercise, but...
I was going to say.
Well, how do you know? You
starting the new year off right with some exercise 6 days in.
Recording in a secret location deep in the heart of the Smeelosphere, in a world where... everyone rocks a stash like Harold. You're listening to C4 on CanucksHockeyBlog.com, the podcast that wishes it had abs like Chris Higgins.
Welcome to the C4 podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. Matt Lee with you here in studio. You can check me out on Twitter at MattLee980. Clayton Emo at Canuck Clay on the Twitter machine joining me via phone. Clay, how are you doing?
I'm good. And although I'm via phone, and I think you'd agree it sounds a lot more clearer than my cell phone because I'm actually still in my office. Now that I say that, I could have just walked 10 minutes and been in studio with
you. I was just going to say, why didn't you just come here in studio for this then?
Okay.
You know what sounds better than phone is you being here in person.
You're right. I'm going to hang up. I'll be there in 15. No, we don't have time.
No, we don't have time, Clay. Okay. There's no time whatsoever.
Poor planning on my part, I must admit.
We're recording this podcast, by the way, before the Canucks-Islanders game. So if we're not bringing up the Islanders game, there's a reason for that. It's about 6 o'clock local time here right now. So it's just prior to the Islanders game. Clay, are you going to this game? No, you said you're not. You have a meeting.
No, this one, yeah, I'm going to be at my church tonight, going to get some extra exercise in, some much needed exercise, but
I was gonna say,
well, how do you know? You
starting the new year off right with some exercise 6 days in.
So yes, I will be following the game, PVR in the game, probably watching it tonight, but no, I'm not going tonight. Are you going to be there representing any of your many employers there?
No, I will not be there at the game tonight. I'll be sadly working on this podcast, so I guess I'm sort of representing my employer, but not really.
Very, very good. But I will be there on Thursday, but I know we're going to be spending a few minutes talking about that.
Yeah, we will. Chris Golden at Lightforce, by the way, not present for this one, but don't you fret, because I know there are a lot of Chris Golden fans out there. He'll be back for Monday's show. Coming up today, we're going to get right into the gigantic elephant in the room, like Clay mentioned a little bit earlier. Roberto Luongo set to make his return to Rogers Arena as a member of the Florida Panthers this time. His first visit to Vancouver since the trade last March. We're going to revisit the best and the worst of Roberto Luongo, the timeline of what set things in motion for his eventual trade. We'll talk about your memories of Luongo, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And of course, we're going to preview what should be an emotionally charged game tomorrow.
Good block by Bonino, right in front. Great save by Miller on Pavel Datsyuk. Bronson works towards the front of the net. His shot was blocked and didn't get through. Right in front, Datsyuk. Great save by Miller. Rabada walks out, shoots. Great save, Howard. Rebound. He scores. Ram for Rabada.
Yeah, I'm looking at it that way. You know, I'm just trying to enjoy it. You know, enjoy my time. To be honest with you, I've been really looking forward to coming here and spending these few days practicing and seeing the guys, the trainers. When the trade happened, it happened in a rush and we were on the road, so I didn't really get a chance to properly say goodbye to everybody.
All right, Clayton, before we get into the Luongo discussion, this is Rewind. Let's take a few minutes to dissect this team's performance over the last few days. You know, we've talked a little bit last podcast about the Los Angeles game. You can't really fault Ryan Miller for the loss in that one unless you're talking about how he let in 2 goals in the last 2 minutes. That said, though, Ryan Miller, 29 of 30 saves against Detroit on Saturday. If you actually go back to after the 5-1 Rangers loss on December 13th, Miller's played 6 games, 190 of 200 saves, which is a 950 save percentage, a 1.66 goals against. The numbers beforehand, obviously pretty ugly, but what have you made out of Ryan Miller's performance the last, you know, half a dozen games or so?
Oh, he's been very solid, especially after talking about getting that rest that he needed. And I know a lot of people were on his case about he's not like the oldest guy in the world, but why does he need rest here? But, you know, his performance over the past 6 games speaks for itself. And I was at this game on Saturday. I took my lovely daughter, Kayla, had some great daddy-daughter time. And
yeah, by the way, so sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, no problem.
You got a picture with Jim Benning and Kayla.
That's right. Can we
explain that story very quickly?
Happy to. Being blessed to be a season ticket holder for the last 4 years, and one of the perks this year is they're having, Matt, you may know, these series of town hall meetings where it's basically Benning and Lyndon there to, in essence, State of the Union, but more importantly, answer questions from the audience. So there's about 300 to 400 people there, I would say. They're doing about 4 or 5 of these. They're right in the middle of these. And I strategically placed myself where right at the end, as Lyndon was wrapping up and, you know, signing a few jerseys, Benning quietly just kind of escaped to the side, and I basically brought Kayla, and as I usually do with my kids, and I make them the pawn, right? And I say, hey, Jim, do you mind taking a picture with my daughter Kayla? And he goes, no
problem. Of course, Clayton had to use poor Kayla to get this picture with Jim Benning.
It gets better, my friend.
Because he can't say no to the little girl wearing the Canucks jersey.
But he might say no to the 40-year-old man. Anyway, so I take this picture, Jim Benning and Kayla, a great picture, as you saw. And then right at the end, I shake his hand and I go, hey, Jim, just so you know, I'm the guy in the Canucks Christmas Carol video.
Of course you did. You had to drop the name drop there.
Just to see what he'd say. And Matt, without a word of a lie, he looks me straight in the eye and he goes, yeah, that was great. So,
which means he didn't see it.
Unfortunately, I think you're right. But I felt good for about 2 minutes or so.
You didn't get a picture with Trevor Linden, though. You had to settle for Jim.
Yeah, he was too busy, and Kayla was cute. She didn't know who Jim was, didn't know who Trevor was. So she basically said to me, why does the tall guy have more friends? So I thought it was kind of cute, meaning obviously the adulation and the popularity of Lyndon as opposed to Benning. But the actual town hall was interesting. You know, nothing earth-shattering. They talked a bit about Cassian, talked a bit about some of their prospects. And basically, it sounds like they want to go with the team they have right now. They'll say they're always looking to improve the team like anyone else is. But they like the guys that they have. They just want them to play more consistently. And that was kind of analogous to what they said about Cassian.
All right, well, let's go back to Ryan Miller before I rudely interrupted you. But
no
very
problem.
Quickly, is Ryan Miller doing enough to propel this team into the playoffs, or is this just a streak for Ryan Miller where he's playing hot and he'll come back down to earth a little bit later? What are you thinking?
I would like to think that he has found his groove, he's found his rhythm in Vancouver, and this is the Ryan Miller that we are going to see from here on in. He's not going to be perfect, but he gives the team a chance to win as he has for the first 3 months, and I think they're going to ride Ryan Miller as much as they can to a playoff spot. How about you, my friend?
Well, I mean, Ryan Miller is always going to be prone to a bad game once in a while, which I'm fine with taking as long as he plays consistently in the next 5 games. You know, for every one game where he's, you know, horrible, if he plays solidly enough for the next 5 games, I'm okay with taking that. I'll take that any day of the week.
Yep.
That said, you mentioned, you know, the Canucks riding Ryan Miller. Why do they go back to Eddie Lack then in this case?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Miller's quietly, now he's over the 20, he's at the 20 win mark, and that's pretty quick and, you know, not unexpected, of course. But, yeah, you know, given the whole, you know, Islanders game that's going to happen in an hour, where Lack is starting, as we know, versus the Florida matchup, Willie always says that he has this plan that has already mapped out how many Ryan's going to play, how many Eddie's going to play. So it'll be very interesting to see if they deviate from that, whether it's pressure from whoever, but you know, they've been pretty solid about giving Lack 1 out of every 4 starts as opposed to 1 out of every 2 or 1 out of every 3.
Of other notes, before the Islanders game, we saw Alex Burrows reunited with the Sedin twins in practice. I ask you this, Alex Burrows obviously having a lengthy history with the Sedins. You know, we've seen 30-goal seasons from Burrows before. He's played pretty well over the last stretch of games as well. Is this a permanent solution, or is this just an experiment where Desjardins is trying to see what if he plays with Burrows, or is this a case of Verbata trying to jumpstart Nick Bonino and Chris Higgins, or is this a reward for Alex Burrows' good play the last couple of games?
Well, any more situations you want to throw out there?
Well, I don't know. There's a number of possibilities. We're just extrapolating the most logical solutions here.
All joking aside, I think you touched on a few things. I think this is just, strategic for a few reasons. Number one, I think Willie wants to see what Burrows can do with the Twins and almost reward Burrows. He's played very well, even getting, quote, demoted to the fourth line, but he's done his job. He's the only one, as we talked about last podcast, the only one that goes to the net consistently and with results. So I think it's a reward for Burrows, and it's a chance for Willie to see what Burrows can do with the Twins. I think it is almost, I heard this on the radio this morning. It's kind of funny. It's like when one kid screws up in elementary school, so the whole class gets detention. That must be what Verbata must feel like, because he's being, quote, penalized for playing now with Bonino and Higgins, and that's a way to jumpstart Bonino. No, there's no indication of Verbata's play. In fact, I think because Verbata has been playing well, he's starting to score again they want him to light a fire under Bonino's Bonino and Higgins. So I think it's a couple of things, and I think it just sets them up for down the road when it gets into the March, April playoff push. When it gets into the playoffs, I think Willie Desjardins wants to know that he can put Burrows up there if he needs to. He can drop Bravada down if he needs to. What I asked you, Matt, is why are they so set? I know Bonino's a center. I know Higgins is a left winger. But why are they so set on keeping those two guys together? I would move Higgins off of there. He's the one. Well, who knows? But they're both not doing anything. But
so
why
who
not?
Would you put up in place of Higgins then?
Well, put Cassian and make him play on his off wing.
But
I don't
what
know.
Has Zach Cassian done in that one game he played to warrant coming up to the second line?
No, you're right. Maybe there's not another option, especially as a pure left winger. I just think, you know, maybe they're talking about trying to jumpstart Bonino, but I think it's just as much trying to jumpstart Higgins.
Well, by hook or by crook, Chris Higgins is probably the closest thing to a second-line winger that the Canucks have at this point, because Lyndon Vay not cutting it. We'll get into him a little bit later. Sean Matthias looks like a fixture on that third line as well. Yannick Hansen, you know, been there, done that. So almost by default, you're sort of left with Bonino and Higgins as your second line.
Yeah, and you even look at the roster on, at least the way that the Canucks.com has it, they only show two left wingers. Daniel and Higgins.
Yeah.
Like everyone else is considered right or center, right?
Very quickly, the other thing I didn't mention in the earlier possibilities of why this sort of shakeup is happening on the front two lines is that what if Alex Burrows is putting back up with the Sedins to sort of get Daniel Sedin going? I'm looking at the numbers. Daniel Sedin has 8 goals in 37 games this season. That's way down for Daniel Sedin. He's got an 8.8 shooting percentage, which is also pretty down as well.
That's a good point. So you're not. It sounds like you're not too worried about Henrik then.
I'm not too worried about Henrik because Henrik is being Henrik. He's always been there to, you know, be the playmaker, the setup guy. He's got 34 points. He's getting close to a point per game, as is Daniel. But the thing is, the two numbers between the two twins are almost the same. 8 goals each, 26 assists for Henrik, 27 for Daniel. Daniel is on pace for less than 20 goals in a season for the first time, and I can't remember.
But then Verbata's got 16. So
And that's just it. Verbata hogging all the goals up front for the Canucks.
Well, you can argue. Yeah, the Sedins combined have 16 and Verbata has 16. So there's your first line. It's still accounted for 32 goals. And as we talked about, Verbata's on pace for about a 35-goal season. The Twins are just under a point a game. So you can't really argue with their production. It's more of maybe how it's allocated.
Yeah, and so quite possibly, you know, Desjardins is doing this to sort of spread out the offense a little bit. And that's probably just it. But we'll see how long this experiment lasts. If it even lasts past the New York Islanders game, we'll see if that top line of the Sedins and Burrows is together when the Canucks entertain Luongo and the Panthers on Thursday. The other thing I want to talk about, Zach Cassian, we mentioned him a little bit earlier. He gets back into the lineup in the absence of Lyndon Vay, who is a healthy scratch. Cassian, 2 penalty minutes and 3 hits. Very quickly, what was your thoughts on Cassian? Was he just kind of meh or invisible, or kind of wait and see what he does in the next game?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't think he was invisible because I did notice that he was skating relatively well. He took that embellishment penalty, as you'll remember, and I got some reaction on Twitter. I just thought for first game, he was okay. He didn't cause any defensive breakdowns or goals against. There's only one goal against the Canucks, and I think nor did he do much offensively. But he wasn't a liability, and I think he was putting in the effort, and I think that's all you can ask for a first game. Now, if this is 5 games later and we're still saying the same thing, then I think we have an issue, but I thought he was okay.
So does Cassian get a 5-game leash before, you know, Desjardins comes to the point where I have to reinsert Lyndon Vay back into the lineup?
Yeah, you know, I think Cassian will stick. I think Vay... Yeah, it's tough for him. You know, who else would come out? Is it just a matter of those two, or I know we talked about last time. Is it something like Matthias or Hansen? No, Hansen.
Why? I can't see any of those two getting pulled out. I can't see Bo Horvat getting pulled out. I can't see Derek Dorsett getting pulled out.
Yeah. So really, maybe it is a Cassian versus Vay thing right now, and I think they're going to look at Cassian at least for a couple games.
It's a good problem to have in the grand scheme of things when at least you have 12 forwards or 11 forwards who are going, and you just have to go between one of the two to figure out who's going to be your 12th forward.
Yeah, well, you look at, and it does speak to the Canucks' depth, I think we've talked about too. You kind of look at rosters from a few years past, even the cup run, and you're talking about guys like that, you know, Oreskovich and you know, so maybe it's a good problem to have.
Yeah, I mean, it's no longer a revolving door of fourth liners that you're reinserting into your lineup. At least it's down to two people most of the time.
Yep, that's a good point.
And that is important if you're Willie Desjardins and you do have your eye on the playoffs if you want to build team chemistry. So there is that going for the Canucks. Very quickly, it looks like Tom Cestito done as a Canuck, waived, sent to Utica, no one picked him up. Safe to say he's done?
Yeah, if Cassian was having trouble getting lineup, I don't see how Cecito gets in. I don't have much to add about that. Although every time I hear the Flyers and they're Tim Cecito, I do get confused once in a blue moon. Okay. No, not you?
No, because I'm a little more well-versed on my Cecitos, thank you.
On TSN, I think she's awesome, but Kate Burness called him Tom Cecito.
What happens when you're Papa and Mama Cecito and you name your kids Tim and Tom.
See, I didn't even know they were brothers.
You're just asking for it.
Okay. They are brothers, though.
I don't know. Like, you have a brother, Clay. I don't know. I don't think his name is, like, what rhymes with Clay?
Well, his name is Jay.
Oh, that is annoying.
Well, Clayton and Jason, is that any better?
Sort of. Not really,
though.
Well,
what's your brother's name?
Trevor.
Oh.
Well, there you go. My parents were smarter than that.
Apparently.
Very quickly, help on the way for the Blue Line. Dan Hamm is saying he hopes to return by the end of January. He was skating a little bit in practice as well. Not a moment too soon, am I right?
Yeah. He bona fide top four, if not top two. Canadian gold medal winner. It just a trickle-down effect in a good way, a trickle-up effect in that it just makes it that much stronger. And then, obviously, we were looking at one of Stanton, Weber, or Spezza sitting, but they're playing okay. They're not...
Bending, not breaking.
Correct, exactly.
Perhaps no one wanting Dan Hamm's back more than Dan Hamm, or than Kevin Bieksa, for that matter.
Yeah, and if Hamm's gets in, of those three guys that I just mentioned, Weber, Stanton, Spezza, generally, who would you sit?
That's actually a tough one to say because Yannick Weber has actually played pretty well over the last couple games.
Yep.
I was a fan of his before, but you might even say Ryan Stanton.
Yeah.
He took some untimely penalties the other night against the Kings, which cost them.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, Weber actually has 9 points. Not that it's all about the points. But
yeah, here's your fun fact. Yannick Weber, second on the team in scoring among defensemen.
Yeah, there you go. That's what I mean. And
that's sad.
Stanton and Spezza only have 8 between the two of them.
I mean, it doesn't come down strictly to numbers, but if you're looking at them numbers alone,
yeah,
you might make a case for Ryan Stanton getting pulled out here a little bit.
Yep. No, I think it's fair.
There's been a changing of the guard on Canada's West Coast. A brand new face in goal, the most prominent of the alteration.
Luongo with a glove save.
That's highway robbery. Somebody call a law.
Henrik Sedin misplayed the puck behind the net. A centering pass. Barnes. Oh, what a save by Luongo. Here's Kane with Taves. Kane, backhand shot. He scores.
Tipped in from Luongo. Down to Dimitri. Oh, into the goal post.
Stretching out on Pavel Dimitra. Oh, what a save!
It hits Bergeron, but the reactive save as Bergeron trying to corral a rolling puck. There's the first tip off the arm. There's the second off the blocker. And big emotional saves to ignite this crowd.
My contract sucks. Yeah, I'd scrap it if I could right now.
As I'm entering the office, they hand me the paper to sign the waiver. So I was like, oh. So it became real at that point that this was probably it.
I had a great 6 years in Vancouver. I think it's a wonderful city. I really enjoyed my time there. Fortunately, I was not able to bring a Stanley Cup there, which is probably my biggest regret, but it'll be remembered for 6 great years.
All right, this is half full, half empty, and actually perhaps this is appropriate given that's pretty much how fans felt about Roberto Luongo throughout much of his time here. Wouldn't you say, Clay?
Oh, absolutely, and I was having some fun with some people on Twitter today because he had his press conference today, and everyone loves him now, right, because they felt bad about the way he left, and I know we're going to talk about that, and he because of his personality on Twitter, everyone loves him now, but 3-4 years ago when he was having playoff meltdowns or whatever, it wasn't like that, and he was quite polarizing, and that's the word that people like to use, but it's true, and you're exactly right, Matt, half full, half empty, you either loved him or hate him, there wasn't really much in between.
What's your summary and your overall feelings towards Roberto Luongo and his time here? I'm just curious because it seems like every person I talk to has a different answer.
Yeah, for me, and I can only speak for myself, obviously, I'm a big fan of his. I was a big fan when he was going through the whole Schneider stuff, the Lack stuff. He's one of the only two jerseys I know. Of course, I own. The other one, as you know, is my David Booth. We've talked about that before. So I've always liked him. I think he's easily the best goalie, obviously, we've ever had. But I just think... he just, with becoming more likable in his last 2 or 3 years here, acknowledging that he had some poor performances, I just think I did feel bad when he got ushered out, whether that was a Torch thing, a Heritage Classic thing, a combination of everything. But I just and you can lament what we got back in that trade and where we are, where we could have been, blah blah blah. But overall, I just thought he was good when he was good. He gave us a very good chance to win, and it's so cliche, Matt, but he was brought us to one game from the Stanley Cup, and who knows, you know, a more well-rested team, a sharper focus. It could be the opposite, no riot, and the Stanley Cup banner hanging from our roof.
It's really amazing, you know, 4 years later, that that's what it came down to. Had the Canucks won this game in 2011, Game 7, the script would have played itself out so much more differently. No matter what the Canucks had done after that game, if they had just won that game, it doesn't matter how much the Canucks lost after that. If they had just won that game, Luongo still would have been hailed a hero in Vancouver.
You're right. And the picture this, man, winning the gold medal, right, February 2010, and then winning the Stanley Cup in June 2011.
Yeah.
Two massive wins.
They would have named a street after him, for all we know.
Absolutely. So you're right. It's just funny. The pendulum would have swung completely one way, and we're not even having this conversation, and he's probably still here.
Yeah, and, you know, just to rewind the clocks back a little bit, things were never the same after that Game 7, were they?
No.
I mean, the pressure just became too much for Luongo, or anyone on the team for that matter, to bear. Everything just sort of crumbled away. You know, I read friend of the show, Bruce Daubigan's book, Ice Storm, and he just talked about how fans became even more jaded about this franchise as a whole following that loss. They craved for change. Corey Schneider, you know, perhaps rightly or wrongly, became the symbol of that change. And, you know, even after everything, the damage was already done. It was beyond repair. Everyone assumed Luongo was gone after 2012 when they lost to Los Angeles, and then again in 2013 when they got swept by the Sharks.
Yeah, no, you're right. And it's funny. You can look at the whole team, and I agree, and that was an excellent book, and it talks about the flux and the discomfort and everything for the whole team, including management all the way down. But then you can just look at the goaltending itself and to think that, in essence, and Corey Schneider was playing in that series, right, in that final. They brought him in, and they brought Luongo back in, and it was just so... Did Schneider play in that final?
Or
I get mixed up with Chicago.
Against the Bruins?
No, I'm getting mixed up with Chicago. He played. He came in
2011 against Chicago.
Yeah, against Chicago.
He played Game 6 before he had that mysterious groin injury, and Luongo came in for cleanup.
And
then, of course, Ben Smith scored the overtime winner.
Right. Okay. Excuse me, listeners. That was my mistake. But it goes to say 2012, and then it became Luongo versus Schneider. Like, who's the starter? Who's the bona fide number one? And it didn't really leave until Schneider got traded, obviously, for the pick that turned out to be Horvat. But then the lack just comes in and takes Schneider's place.
Yeah, and going back to the Schneider trade, everyone talked about how, you know, reportedly the Oilers had offered a better package for Schneider. Mm. And, you know, you read Daubigan's book, he talked about how that wasn't true, apparently. Apparently, the package of a prospect first and a third was what Gillis had wanted in exchange for Corey Schneider, not actually what was being offered.
Right. And what did he end up getting? He got the prospect.
He just got Bo Horvat.
The first.
And it still remains to be seen how that plays out for the Canucks,
but
I mean, if you're Roberto Luongo, you're getting pulled in so many different directions by the team, the fans, everything.
Yeah.
And it was so much weirder even after that trade was made, and, you know, Francesco Aquilini shows up at his doorstep in Florida.
Yep.
Moments after the trade is made, and it was like, that's for me when things started to turn and the fan perception of Luongo started to turn a little bit. It was like, okay, this is actually just ridiculous. You know, he started to get looked at as more of a sympathetic hero.
I was just going to say, so you think the mood became more sympathetic now?
And I think that was in addition to the fact that, you know, Roberto Luongo was treating us to a lot of great tweets as well.
Right.
You know, it was like this had gone on for far too long. Just give the man his peace already and trade him somewhere.
Right. So Luongo's a starter for 2013-14. As we know, as we've talked about, they started really well. They go into Christmas break doing well. And then the Olympics happened.
Yeah.
And then we knew that, as much as we wanted him to, we knew he wasn't going to unseat Carey Price as a starter.
Well, he certainly was the underdog going into the Olympics.
They win the gold medal. We don't have to rehash that. They come back, and then what happened there, Matt? Because it's not like he got a bunch of games then.
No, he didn't. He didn't get a lot of games, and perhaps this is on the fault of John Tortorella at the time.
Yep.
But for some inexplicable reason, I guess Tortorella's mindset shifts, and he thinks that Eddie Lack now gives him the best chance to win games on a nightly basis. And you know what? And like you mentioned it, the straw that broke the camel's back was when Tortorella decides to use Lack over Luongo at the Heritage Classic.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Were you there for that game?
I was there, and you might remember Ottawa. Obviously, Ottawa won that game, but Lack, he had an okay game. He wasn't awesome, but
I thought he was bad.
People were clamoring for Luongo.
Yeah.
It was uncomfortable.
I was at that game as well,
yep.
And I just remember like the look of incredulity among the media.
I like that word.
When fans, like 50,000 fans,
yep,
chanting, "We want Luongo." What was the chant? I don't even remember.
It's got to be, "We want Lou."
"We want Lou" is what it was.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
You know, it's like 2 years ago, this team could not have gotten Luongo out of town fast enough.
Yeah.
And now the fans want him again. It's like, we love him, we hate him, we love him, we hate him. And again, it symbolizes, man, tongue-tied here,
yeah,
symbolizes the entire relationship with Luongo over the course of his time here.
Yeah, you know, I'm just looking it up. I'm with you. So the Olympics end, the Canucks beat St. Louis 1-0, and Eddie Lack gets a shutout.
Okay.
Then 2 nights later, they play Minnesota. They lose 2-1 in a shootout, and the goalie for that game is also Eddie Lack. So
the numbers were good.
Yeah, the numbers are good, but it's not like Eddie Lack had just won two straight and two shutouts. No, he won one, and he lost one. So
if you're a normal head coach, don't you at least give Luongo a chance to get the net back?
Absolutely. And even if you're an abnormal coach, as Torts turned out to be, like, I don't know, maybe some listeners are going to say, "Oh, Clay, you're being too much of a wimp or too sympathetic," but give him a loyalty starter.
Yeah, like throw him a bone or something.
Like, it's not. And are you telling me that Lack gave you that much better of a chance to win than Luongo does? No.
Yeah. And again, like, the importance of that game was pretty huge for the Canucks, and
yes,
especially for Luongo. Like, he had that game circled on his calendar,
yep,
ever since they had announced the game was coming to Vancouver.
Yep.
Like, he had custom gear brought in, as did Eddie Lack, for that matter.
Right.
But, he wanted to play this game. He talked about after how he wanted to play that game. And, of course, that was enough for him to go to his agent and get that trade done. And it was done pretty quickly, actually.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And then, I can't remember where the Canucks were with respect to the playoff bar, though. Do you remember at that time?
They were still hovering around in the equation. Like, they had done enough to stay in the hunt, like somewhere between 8th and 10th.
Yeah.
But,
well, so I don't know. You heard it today, Matt. In his press conference, he actually referenced the fact that something along the lines of, if I had started that game, who knows, I might still be here. So he obviously didn't say, "Well, if I started that game, I would have never, ever left." But he did intimate that that was a, like you said, the straw that broke the camel's back.
Man, I can't wait for Roberto Luongo to come out with his autobiography when he retires. Is he going to title it, like, "Who Knows" or "What If? The Saga of Bobby Lou"?
Yeah, you know.
That would be a great book.
I think it would be an instant bestseller.
It would.
For those that know how to read.
Like, I just want him to have this tell-all about everything that happened.
Yeah. Yeah,
because I feel like there's, even after today, after, you know, the year that it's been since he's been gone,
yeah,
I feel like there are still some things that have not been discussed.
So we've just spent 15 minutes talking about it. Do you think it's overblown, his return, or do you think it's worthy of all the hype it's getting?
It's worthy of the hype. Yeah. I mean, like you mentioned, this is the best goaltender in Vancouver Canucks history.
Yeah.
You might even make a case that, you know, he could have his number retired or at least be in the Ring of Honor.
Yes. Yes.
So I feel like this is not a situation where, you know, Ryan Kessler is coming back to Vancouver.
Right. So speaking of which, I know we talked about this last podcast. What sort of reception, what sort of tribute, if anything, do you expect?
Roberto Luongo now, even after he's been gone and after all the crap he's been through,
yep,
I think is ultimately a fan favorite in Vancouver.
Yep.
And I think he will be treated as such.
Yep.
I think the Canucks will do the dance as a franchise, have the video montage, and they will let whatever happens happen organically.
So do you think more than a 7 to 10 second video highlight thing, or do you think that's all they'll do?
I want to say it's going to be at least a 30 second,
yeah,
montage for Luongo, and I think he deserves that.
Right.
Like, he played as big a role as Ryan Kessler did to get this team to the Stanley Cup Finals.
Yep.
Even before the Stanley Cup Finals, he was anointed this team's savior, and, you know, We'll get into this a little bit later, but he provided some great moments for Vancouver Canucks fans.
Former captain, as the old
whether by hook or by crook for that one.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I predict or anticipate some sort of tribute video and all cheer. You know, it'll be really interesting. I wonder what Miller's going to be thinking every time Longo makes a save. You know there's going to be a Lou chance.
Yeah, like, very quickly, do you think Eddie Lack should have started this game just for the drama of it all?
No, I don't. As much as we just talked about Lack over Luongo for the Heritage Classic, I don't equate them, and I don't get into the whole, you know, buddy versus buddy. You know, someone could just argue, well, this is a two.
Everyone got into the buddy versus buddy when it was Luongo versus Schneider here.
Yeah, and it's funny. I'm not sure you caught Lack even said today that he was actually expecting to start not tonight but on Thursday.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. No, but I don't get into it, and I think. We're always talking about the implications of the 2 points and stuff. It's a very important game, right? Tonight's a very important game against the Islanders. Thursday's very important as the Canucks battle for second place. I just think, and it's not like I'm not saying there's a drop off from Miller to Lack, but if this was one of those quote scheduled starts for Lack tonight against the Islanders, then so be it. And yeah, it'd make fun for the Twitter memes and and the screen caps and everything. But I don't see a reason, any extra reason why Lack should play on Thursday. You?
Well, I'm a lover of drama, so
yeah.
I would have liked to have seen it.
Yeah.
But very quickly before we end this segment, will Roberto Luongo get a standing ovation at Rogers Arena on Thursday night?
Simple answer, yes. You?
I'm going to say yes.
Yeah.
I'm normally not an optimistic guy, but I'm going to go with a yes on this one.
There's going to be a lot of Luongo jerseys, a lot of Luongo chants, and hopefully not a Luongo win.
I hope he shuts them out.
Jerk.
All right, well, it's time for Chris's favorite segment of the C4 podcast. That's Ask CHB, where we ask you the questions. You provide us the answers, or something along those lines. We asked you guys, what's your best or worst Roberto Luongo memory? Of course, we hashtag it with Ask CHB. We'll start with Twitter. Lynn's at FeedMeHappy. Okay.
Yeah.
Responds with saying, tweeting pictures of toilets.
When was that?
I think it was back when... the Canucks were in Anaheim for one trip, and he tweeted the picture of the toilet that Luongo infamously was on during overtime of Game 5 back in 2007.
Where Danny Sabourin had to come in.
Yes.
Oh, okay, that makes sense. Okay, Lindsay's a lot.
Very quickly, what was your reaction in that game when you saw Danny Sabourin come out of the tunnel to start overtime in an elimination game, no
less? Pretty much the same. Was it Dave Nonis that was pretty much the same as his.
Dave Nonis looked like he was about to have a stroke.
Yeah, and I don't like to swear, but I probably swore. You know, like I must have done something because that was pretty shocking.
You know, it's ironic that Roberto Luongo was on the toilet, because I should have been on the toilet when I saw that happen.
Nicely done.
Because I almost pooped myself.
Thank you.
Anna Forsyth, A Forsyth 03, says, worst, standing on the middle of Metrotown on my last trip to Vancouver when my friend tells me he's been traded. We have that tweet. Thank you, Anna, for that one. But Clay, where were you when you found out about the Luongo trade?
I was... That happened... Was that 2 days after the thing?
It was 2 days after the Heritage Classic, and it was around like noon or so.
You know, unlike knowing where I was when Princess Di got killed, I don't know where. I bring that point up because although it's very important to me, this Luongo trade, actually, it wasn't one of those places where I remember where I was, though. Do you remember where you were?
Not that Roberto Luongo, by the way, is any less important than Princess Di was.
No, not at all.
I was at my other job, actually. I was just, I think it was in the bathroom, ironically. And a friend texted me just with the OMG !!
Yeah.
And I was like, What just happened?
Yeah.
And then, sure enough, I look, and yeah, the trade had been done.
Wow.
It really came out of nowhere for me, too, by the way.
Yeah.
Just given how long the saga had dragged on. Let's get to a couple Facebook responses here on Canucks Hockey Blog's Facebook page. Andre Beck says, worst memory, Luongo couldn't be clutch in the playoffs when he had to be, i.e. Game 6 in Chicago of 2009.
Oh, that's tough. That's 6 years ago.
But, yeah, well, Andre couldn't let it go.
No.
And on that note, on my Facebook page, my friend Daniel Luff says, best his first playoff season, but goes back to worst, the infamous 7-pass Luongo night, Chicago Game 6, first series back in 2009. So a couple people actually said Game 6, 2009 was their worst Luongo memory.
Yeah, they don't like that one.
Yeah, you know what? I think it was just kind of resigned. It didn't really hit me that hard.
Yep.
Just because it was like, this is the first time it's happened, and I was just sort of stunned more than anything.
Right.
And Kurt Blutz, I know I've mispronounced that name, but thank you for your response, says, I remember jumping off my couch for this one, and he has the attached video of Luongo absolutely robbing Ben Eager back in, I want to say, 2010's playoff series against the Blackhawks.
I remember that. That was a great save.
I don't think it was the best save Luongo's ever made, though.
No, and Ben Eager, maybe this guy likes Ben Eager then. Like, because he usually doesn't do much either.
Maybe he liked Ben Eager back in 2011 when he was in the penalty box. As always, thank you for your responses on Ask CHB. We take your responses either on the Canucks Hockey blog page or at the C4 Canucks Hockey podcast Facebook page or on Twitter at Canucks Hockey. Thank you for your responses.
Garth, that was a haiku.
Oh, yes. It is now my favorite time of the podcast. That is Haiku Corner, channeling the power of the 575. And today, Matt, because we were talking about Luongo, I requested Luongo-themed haiku, and the people, as always, delivered. So I will read a couple. Matt, as always, instant reaction. Betty Henderson starts us off at Betty Henderson and at Betty Henderson 7. And unfortunately, hers is only 16 syllables, but I still want to read it nonetheless. Lou is not ours, not forgotten. Back in our city, then gone. Lou. And I'll add in another Lou to make it 17.
Oh, I was going to add something else, but that sounds better.
Okay. What were you going to add?
I don't know.
Okay. So I think we'd agree he's not ours, but he's certainly not forgotten. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, no, I think we've given Luongo the justice that he deserves. Again, fan favorite. Probably, I want to say, one of the top five most loved Canucks, I'd even boldly suggest.
No, I'm with you. Anna Forsyth. So not only does she get into SCHB, she must be on Twitter today. She actually gets into haiku as well. She says, my goalie hero, only Lack misses you more. Welcome back, Louie. That's a nice one.
It's a good one.
I should have saved that to the end.
Thanks, Anna. That was a good one. Anna's all over the place in the C4 podcast
Anna's
today.
Anna's solid, as always. Okay, we have our friend at Stuck on the Sofa, the male dog. I will never live that down. This is at Stuck on the Sofa says this, sunburned and rested. He comes back once more to hear, glove save, Luongo. I like that one too. No?
Yeah, you know what? You don't hope for a Vancouver Canucks loss, but yeah, it wouldn't hurt to have John Shorthouse call it one more time.
Absolutely. And I want to give a shout out to at Stuck on the Sofa and this last one, at Larry Wong 84, both Larry and Shuthi, they send me a haiku after every game, and I kind of tweet them out for them. I don't think it's resulted in any added followers to them nor me, but that's okay because we're all about sharing the love. So Larry Wong does two. The first one is, was traded for Burt. Came one win from hoisting cup. Thank you, Bobby Lou. I think that's nice.
Followed by the standing ovation at Rogers Arena.
There you go. It kind of sums up what we're talking about. And lastly, and I knew this was coming, and so did Larry Wong. Here we go. Be ready. Lulu, 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 Lulu.
I'm not a very creative person, Clay.
Yep.
But I feel like I could put together a better haiku than that one.
Well, the beautiful thing about haiku, though, is it doesn't, as long as it's 17 syllables, you can use as many letters as you want. So that last Lou, I think if he had more characters, he would have used more. But it's about 18 use. It's good.
I don't know. We got to up the quality of haikus around here.
Okay, well, what I'll do...
Like, Stuck on the Sofa, if you've got other friends that want to weigh in, get them to send the haikus, too.
Well, Larry,
We can't keep getting Stuck on the Sofa in there.
Larry, Stuck on the Sofa, everyone else, thank you. We still love you. Keep sending your haiku in. You send them in. I'll try and get them in, as long as they're 17 syllables or close.
All right, that's going to do it for episode 38 of the C4CHB podcast. Reminder, you can follow us on Twitter, Facebook, at Canuck Hockey, Canucks Hockey Blog, the C4 podcast on Canucks Hockey Blog. Get those haikus to Clay, by the way. We take your entries, and Clay always makes time for them. Of course, we value your responses on Ask CHB as well. We're going to be back Monday to dissect the Florida game, and I guess we'll have a few minutes to spare on what should be another ho-hum game against the Calgary Flames on Saturday.
You never know. You never know.
All right, you know what? Unless John Tortorella decides to miraculously become part of the Canucks organization again and it's followed by a five-man line brawl to start the game, I'm pretty sure it's going to be just another routine Calgary game.
Yeah, we'll see. Okay, Matt, put it out there. Islanders, Florida, Calgary, how many points did the Canucks get?
Islanders, Florida, Calgary, I say they get 5 of 6.
Oh, so a loss to who?
Florida.
Mm.
In the shootout. because it would be poetic justice.
Indeed, indeed.
What about yourself?
4 or 5, but I'm going to say they're only going to have trouble perhaps tonight against the Islanders.
All right, fair enough.
Yeah.
All right, that'll do it for us on Ask CHB and on Clay's Haiku Corner. That'll do it for us on the C4 podcast, really, on behalf of Canuck Clay or Clay Nemo, whatever. The names are synonymous with each other. I'm Matt Lee at MattLee980. Thank you for listening to the C4 podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. Back Monday. See ya. We're out.